Get 5 TV in a bundle with unlimited 5 Internet 25 and home phone. And get guaranteed savings of $75.95 per month off the regular price for 2 years. Right now, pay only $97.90 per month. Call 310-BELL or visit a Bell store for details. Bell, loving TV just got better.
Welcome to Literary Speaking with Crystal Lee Quibell. Literary Speaking is the author's guide to writing and publishing, sharing tips and tricks for aspiring authors. Crystal Lee's expert guests will bring you the latest information on how to write and publish your book into being. Are you ready to tell your story? Here's your host.
Welcome to Literary Speaking. I'm your host, Crystal Lee Quibell, and today I'm talking with Zoe Zollbrand. Zoe is the author of the fiction novel Currency and her most recent memoir, The Telling. Zoe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So your recent memoir, The Telling, details your experience as a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and you sort of explored the aspects of how it felt to remember as an adult, what had happened, and sort of how you navigated telling your partners, friends, and family, and even their reactions. So was the overall reaction from family pretty supportive when you expressed wanting to write this book?
You know, I wrote for a couple years before telling any of them. And my dad was really the person I felt most concerned about telling, because the relative who abused me is on his side of the family, and my dad's involved with the story in multiple ways. He's a highly respected and beloved man with a little bit of a public presence, and the book deals with some hard realities and stuff he and I have never talked about very openly, so I was very nervous about that. But when I finally did tell him, and this comes up in the book, he was so supportive, so loving and generous, and he has been at every juncture since. So I feel really, really lucky that the most important person to me with this regard has been nothing but generous and supportive.
That's excellent. I know so many people that write memoir, and especially about abuse, there's a huge fear of sharing with their families and wondering what the reaction will be. And sometimes it's good and sometimes not so good. But overall, I think the most important thing is just healing through the writing, right?
Yeah, that was definitely the case with me. And I just didn't feel like I wanted to ask permission until I was very firm in the material and my commitment to writing the book. You know, I didn't want to ask permission to write it, but I did want understanding about it once I got far along.
Yeah. I think for me, what sort of made this, this memoir on the subject particularly stand out was that you shared really honestly that you didn't always feel like it had been traumatic, and that many sexual abuse survivors feel this way. I think there's this sort of very real fear that if we're confused about how we felt during the abuse, is it really traumatic? What were your final thoughts on this after writing the book?
I was so young when my abuse started, 4 years old, that it was mostly a case of it being confusing. It wasn't terrible for the most part, and nor was it pleasurable in the way that older children might experience it because of the ways our bodies are built. But it was it was weird and kind of murky for me. And I say in the book that I'm almost grateful in a strange way for the one time that it was clearly terrible, because even as a child, a very young child, I could understand in that instance that I was being wronged. And it helped me clarify my own experience as I continued to get older and remained in many ways confused about a lot of what happened. Of course, looking back from an adult's perspective, all of it was really terrible and shouldn't have happened. And it's not uncommon for kids for whom this happens to not fully understand until they reach maturity and understand the taboos around it, understand the abuse of trust, to really understand to the extent to which they were harmed and taken advantage of. Once we do feel that way, we feel like we should have been able to stop it, or we should have known back then. And I just feel more strong. You know, it was interesting to me to research and see how common some of these feelings were. And I'd like to communicate that message to other people, that it's quite normal to feel confused about it and to have a different perspective as we gain maturity.
Well, exactly. And I think, I mean, even Oprah mentioned it on one of her shows that, you know, some of her abuse was, there were moments where it was pleasurable. So she, it's really conflicting and confusing, especially at that age. And the way that these sort of abusers work is they know that and they know how to manipulate. So it's really, I think, fantastic to have that understanding out there for people who have been through it to be like, it's normal, it's okay. And, you know, what happened wasn't okay, but, you know, this is how you process. I mean, in one part of the book, you write, I got pregnant a couple months after I returned from Duluth, but I maintained my commitment. At first, I tried to fictionalize the material, but I found that wasn't freeing me from my confusion and shame and fear about the topic of childhood sexual abuse. In fact, writing fiction left me feeling like I was sneaking around in some way, revisiting the slippery, sly pursuits and evasions of my early youth. How did you sort of switch from fiction and find your narrative voice in memoir?
Once I switched from fiction, and as you say, I felt like I was maybe sort of trying to trick myself in some ways by writing fiction. Once I got more clear with myself that I wanted to write a memoir, the voice came pretty quickly, because I think I had worked through some of the resistance already. And so one of the things that made the book exciting to write was feeling like I had found a good voice and that I was able to speak clearly and directly, but also sort of honor, I hope, the mysteries of childhood and the discoveries of adolescence when I was writing about those periods in my life. So the writing came once I let it, not exactly easily, because writing's never easy for me, and there definitely was a lot of psychological baggage to work through, but it came fluidly, at least in terms of the voice, and I think that was just a matter of finding the right form for the right material.
And you really detailed, too, within the book that you were sort of, I don't know if meticulous is the right word, but you were an avid journal writer, so you had journals from different, you know, different stages and things to kind of fall back on for research and also processing, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Certain periods of my life much more so than others, but that was interesting too, to see the voice I had used in those journals and also to recognize that voice as a kind of construction in a way also. It seemed to me, looking back, you know, I could sometimes see that adolescent trying to present herself to herself as more adult, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And did you find, I mean, I don't know if you feel the same, but I know I'd been through abuse and I found that I always felt older than I actually was growing up. I felt like I knew more than most of the other kids in terms of sexuality and what was happening. Did you find the same thing as well?
Yes, I think so. Although, as I say in the book, some of my peers, once we hit puberty, were more advanced sexually. But I felt like, well, actually, I'm right there with you because I've already had these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely had that. You know, I was interested in being older. I wanted to be older. I snuck adult books out of the library, and I was very interested in the adult world and adult things.
Mm-hmm. Well, everyone, you're listening to Literary Speaking with Crystal Lee Quibel, and today I'm talking with author and editor Zoe Zolbrod. When we come back from the break, we'll share how you can win a free copy of her memoir, The Telling, how to find your narrative voice, and what Zoe has learned as a writer and co-editor of the Rumpus Sunday edition. We'll be right back.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
Your story is begging to be told, but do you know where to start? Crystal Lee Quibell is dedicated to helping you achieve your book's publishing dreams. Go to crystalleequibell.com. That's Crystal Lee Quibell, Quibell.com, and sign up for Crystal Lee's newsletter today.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio, talk radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
Welcome back to Literary Speaking. I'm your host, Crystal Lee Quibell, and today we're continuing our conversation with Zoe Zilbrand. Be sure to listen to the end of the show to find out how you can win your own free copy of her memoir, The Telling. Zoe, in speaking of narrative voice before the break, we were kind of going through it a little bit. How would you suggest an author can really find that voice and be able to express it in their writing?
For me, in both my fiction and my nonfiction, it's been about entering into the mind of the person telling the story and perhaps most importantly, understanding why they want to tell it. I think that's what allowed me to write my memoir fluidly, is by the time I actually did it, I was very clear on why I wanted to tell it. Same thing with my first-person protagonist. And I think this is true even of a third-person narrator in fiction. But for me, at least, it's been a little harder with the third person to know how to find the true chord. But definitely with a self-narrator or a first-person narrator, the reason why they want to tell the story seems crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And who they're sort of telling it to as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, I think to finding your voice kind of, I don't know if you've tried this, but where you write like you speak, like using your regular everyday sort of voice to try and get that on the page as well, can sometimes be helpful if you try to write it out in a way that's more authentic to how you actually talk in day-to-day life.
Yeah, like you're actually sitting with someone and telling them. One of the characters in my novel who's written from the first person, it was very much so that I pictured him sitting there and orally telling the story and really tried to capture his speaking voice. I think that's an excellent idea.
And, I mean, in terms of memoir, because sometimes we're just sort of retelling and there's not always a lot of dialogue, you know, how did you find piecing the work together so that it would flow from past to present as you reflected on what you had learned or shared?
I think the way I handled it was by writing in usually short chapters, and each chapter more or less sticking to a certain time period, and the time periods are interwoven. There's not one straight chronology. Sometimes I'm writing about the present kind of as an adult and reflective, and also as a self-conscious writer. Other times I'm writing from the childhood perspective more closely or from the coming-of-age perspective, and I separated them out largely. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. What did you find was the most surprising thing throughout the writing of this memoir?
Well, at the moment, the book has just come out, and I'm most surprised by the outpouring of positive support. It's been wonderful, and I didn't expect it quite. I was, you know, I had fears about this work coming out. I thought there would be some more negative reactions by this point mixed in with all the positive reactions, or some more neutral or kind of put off or freaked out reactions, but the support has been so wide and so warm. I really appreciate it. But during the writing, I was most surprised at how sad and afraid I felt sometimes, since I hadn't known I was carrying that around, and I hadn't really let myself feel that so much as a child.
Well, yes, because in the book you reference several times where you're like, well, I was abused when I was a kid, but I don't think it affected me much.
And then, mm-hmm,
you
right.
know, as you sort of unravel all these things from the past, you start to realize, okay, I think maybe it actually did.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things I thought was interesting too is that you spoke about therapy within the book, and then you know, we kind of had a little chat before the show about writing and using a therapist to maybe help through the writing, and you didn't end up doing that, correct?
Right, I didn't.
Hmm.
That's my own stuff. I don't necessarily recommend that.
Yeah. But it's interesting, though, to see how different, because there's been other memoirs about abuse, and some people are like, oh, I couldn't have done this without having a therapist. And, you know, when I am in the process of writing mine, I haven't. So I think it's just whatever works for everyone, right?
Yeah, I guess that's partly what I explore in the book is the whole thing. We share some things in common when we've been abused as children, but we're still individuals and we're going to have our own path. There's not a one size fits all approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think too, when you were speaking about, you know, the reactions of your peers and family, one of the major things I know I struggled with having been abused and was sharing the news with my parents and siblings, you know, many years later. And you write, children who disclose abuse most often do so to a peer. If they tell an adult, it's most often a mother or a mother figure. The response from that person can have a long-standing impact on the child, exasperating or limiting the effects of the abuse itself. Experts advise that the listener stay calm and encourage the child to talk freely, that she assure the child that she is believed, that she is not at fault, and that she is loved. I felt that was so important to share because, especially as parents or also for anyone listening, you know, it's as a victim, it's so difficult to come forward with this info. And also, you know, people can sometimes further cause trauma by reacting poorly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you find that throughout your experience, you know, when you were researching, writing, and telling people that most of the reactions were quite the opposite of what you expected, maybe?
Well, in my personal experience, by the time I did tell my parents, I did disclose first to a peer many years before I told my parents. Their reactions were not what I had expected. And just in talking to so many people as I've been writing the book and now that it's out, you know, you hear story after story of how people disclose their abuse and it's downplayed. They're told it's no big deal by their mothers sometimes. I mean, by people who should be caring for them. I like to think it's getting better, but, you know, it's still there's no guarantee of how you're going to be met. And in that light, we can understand why kids want to keep quiet about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and sometimes it's some of the reactions are the most surprising. You know, I told one of my siblings and the reaction was really bad. And so for 2 years, I didn't tell anyone else because I thought, well, if this is, you know, if the reaction's going to be, are you sure?
Oh, yeah.
Did you make this
mm-hmm.
up? You know,
right.
It's like, I don't want to go through that five more times. With
no,
the rest of, my
of course you don't.
And my parents, right?
And depending on where you are in age and in maturity and in coming to understand this for yourself and your firmness, how firm your grasp is, it can make you doubt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can really contribute to depression if you feel like you can tell yourself you're making too much of this or, yeah, it can be very damaging to hear those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I really appreciated that you had put that excerpt in about how people usually share with a peer first and then, you know, or somebody that's like a mother figure, and to have the, you know, to not react in a way that's negative, to just be like, you know, it's not your fault. Thank you for sharing with me. This is a really big deal, because it's important to share that, you know, and to let everybody know that no matter what age you're at, it's okay to come forward. Did you really find the overall experience writing the telling as a form of healing, you know, any sort of trauma from the past or anything?
Yes, I absolutely did. And I think, you know, there's been research done to show that writing about trauma is helpful, very helpful. But writing as therapy is supposed to be a bad recipe for writing as art or for writing literature. But I really self-aggrandizing as it may sound, I really feel that this book did both for me. It was a form of healing, and I do think also it can stand as literature. So it's really been one of the most meaningful experiences of my life writing this book.
That's beautiful. I really found, you know, I was conflicted when I emailed you to say, well, the book was really beautiful, because there's some not so beautiful things, but just the way that you were able to sort of interweave the story with the future and your own kids, and just some of the prose was just really, really beautifully done. And so I think it's just as a work of art, it's gorgeous. And even the reflection from you in the future, going back to the past and having, you know, a sort of empathy for your abuser in a way, knowing that obviously something really horrible had to happen to him in order for him to do that as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What do you feel is the best advice you've sort of ever received about writing after going through this experience?
I don't know. Have I received it? I do have a list of quotes that I take as advice, but I think the best advice for any writer is to stick with it. It's a long, long journey. It's the long game. And I also did receive a lot of advice about, you know, writing about the things that scare us or have hurt us is a very meaningful, powerful thing to do.
What do you think, if there was one thing that you would hope for people to take away from the telling, what would it be?
I'd like it to be an invitation for people to talk about our experiences and all their complexity, even when the dominant cultural line provides an expected script. And also, I hope anyone who reads this book, their awareness about child sexual abuse is raised somewhat, such as things you mentioned about, you know, how to react if someone discloses this to someone, and dispel some myths around it that keep us from seeing it clearly.
Mm-hmm. I think too, it was interesting also to see, just as somebody who's been through something similar, that you write about, you know, your children becoming the age that you were when the abuse began. And that actually is a big trigger. I know when I went to therapy, my therapist said the reason why it's bothering you so much is that you have your own children now and you're seeing yourself at that age, really, you know, your own child. So it's all part of the processing, and it's actually quite normal for women after they have children to really become triggered, you know, in that sort of postpartum period.
Definitely with my experience.
Yeah. Do you feel, I mean, from the point of view of having written, and it's now published and it's coming out into the world, and it's being, from what I've seen, received very well and came highly recommended to me as well. Do you, your overall experience in writing memoir, do you feel that you'll touch on writing memoir again, or was this just one time and you'll go back to fiction?
I think in the immediate future, I'm going back to fiction. That's the project I'm working on now. And at this moment, I feel like I've wrung all I can, certainly out of my childhood and kind of adolescence and early adulthood. So I don't anticipate another memoir, but life is long, I suppose. And there are some aspects of nonfiction I really like the research aspect. So maybe there will be some less personal nonfiction in my future.
Well, excellent. Zoe, thank you so much for being here today. I really encourage everybody to order a copy of The Telling. And also, just thank you so much for sharing your story with the world and helping other people as well.
Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for talking to me.
No problem. Everyone, Zoe Zollbrod can be found online at zoezollbrod.com. That's ZoeZollbrand.com. You can win a free copy of The Telling by visiting my website at crystalleequible.com and sign up for our newsletter. Winners will be notified weekly on our Facebook page. Be sure to tune in next week for more tips and tricks on how to write and publish your book. Thank you for listening, and do keep writing.
Thank you for listening to Literary Speaking with your host, Crystal Lee Quibell. To start discovering how you can begin telling your story, go to CrystalLeeQuibell.com. That's Crystal Lee Quibell, Quibell.com. And sign up for Crystal Lee's newsletter. Join us again next week for more advice from your favorite authors and publishing professionals.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.